It's my game right here. I feel it. I'm telling you, I feel it. I taste it. Sometimes you be legendary right here, boy.
This is First and Pod.
They could not run the ball to save their lives in this game.
Your favorite team through a national lens.
The beauty of this podcast is that we don't gloss over anything. We do every team in every game.
Instant reaction to all the big games all season long.
The NFL never seems to let us down when we need a banger, banger.
Now, here are your hosts, Andrew Filippone, with 8-time Pro Bowl corner and 3-time first-team NFL All-Pro.
Peterson may go all the way. He will. Patrick Peterson wins it.
Patrick Peterson.
All right, welcome back to another episode of First and Pod. I would call this a better late than never championship reaction episode. Yes, we understand we're a few days later than most podcasts. That's because the two of us got snowed in New York City, and it created some hectic times for the two of us. But here we are. We both made it back in one piece. Pat's back down south. I'm back in Pittsburgh. And here we are getting you set for the Super Bowl 60 matchup that this guy right here predicted when the playoffs started for us. Seahawks and Patriots. He's Patrick Peterson. Our producer, James Jackson's here as well. And we will recap the two games that happened last weekend with some more information that has trickled in, including Bo Nix at odds a little bit with Sean Payton, offensive coordinator fired there as well. And the Patriots are on to another Super Bowl. And by the way, this podcast brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more. Really easy. Just search out the podcast wherever you get podcasts and then subscribe to it, rate it, review it. And that's how we grow the thing. James, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. And Pony, you're right. Better late than never to break down these championship games between the AFC and the NFC. We'll talk about kind of the results and the residual effects from these games in a little bit. But first, I just need kind of the initial reaction and breakdown. We'll start in the AFC because the Broncos, they went into battle with Jared Stidham. They thought they were confident. A bunch of the NFL world was not as confident. And at times, it looked like they were going to do it. And then they fall short to the Patriots on some controversial decisions on fourth down and everything. So Pony and Pat, break it down. What were your thoughts about the New England Patriots winning the AFC Championship?
Well, first and foremost, it was a very, very interesting game, to say the least. You know, it was very, very two different halves. You know, the first half, you know, New England Patriots couldn't do anything. They couldn't really do anything their entire game. And then you had the one splash play by Stidham to the receiver. I think it was
Mims.
It was Mims Martin down the sideline. Yeah, yep. He beat Gonzalez up the sideline to end up scoring on him later. But other than that, I mean, it was basically a field position game, you know. And, you know, Drake May only threw the ball for 86 yards. The second half, like I said, was basically the tell of a tape of two halves, because if you was able to get the lead in the first half, going into that second half, you pretty much won that ball game, because neither offense was able to move the ball, pick up first downs, and sustain drives to be able to put points on the board. Then, you know, there was some opportunity to get points on the board, but then the elements played a huge factor in this game. Three field goals being missed, one of those being blocked by Taylor III, which was a huge play in the game that ended up giving the New England Patriots the edge to end up winning this ball game. I know there's a moment in the first half where a lot of people is talking about where Sean Payton should have kicked the field goal versus, you know, going for it there. That was a gutsy call, but that's who Sean Payton is. You know, we have to go back to 2009 when he had a surprise onside kick in the Super Bowl, the biggest game of them all. So there, to me, that wasn't a surprise that Sean Payton went for it on fourth and one. I was more surprised on the play that was called. Going into this ball game, talked about physicality, talked about want to impose your will, having two guys on the offensive lineman, on the offensive line that are all pros, and you run a play that's pretty much cutting half of the field off to your backup quarterback. I just think that wasn't a great play selection for the team in that scenario. So only thing I'll probably take away from that situation is the play selection. I agree with him wanting to be up 14-0 against a team to where his defense had all the momentum. His defense was rolling, getting three and outs. Could have had a couple of interceptions that they dropped. So they was playing at the right, you know, at the right pace as a team. Just not getting those points ultimately came back and hunted them because they ended up losing the ball game 10-7, you know. So overall, they played Denver Broncos did as much as they could going into this ball game with their backup quarterback. Defense played outstanding. Both defenses played outstanding. But Drake May just picked up a couple more first downs, and the New England Patriots just had three more points than the Denver Broncos to be your AFC champion.
So everybody for the last few days has harped on the fourth down decision. And I think that Sean Payton has gotten, you know, the rightful criticism that I did not think that was the right call in the moment. That's not a second guess. Everybody has said the same thing on it. Go up two scores with the way your defense is playing. You're at home. You're at Mile High. The Patriots offense hasn't done anything. Don't give them even a spark. Don't give them any life in the game. I think all of that is right. I think it's a
super. But they didn't give them a spark in the game. They still three. They got them on the three and out.
Sure.
They just at the end of the game, it ended up mattering. But they didn't take no momentum. Like, the momentum didn't shift at all. New England still wasn't able to move the ball.
Well, I agree with that. But I felt like watching the game when Denver didn't get points there, that it let New England back in the game.
Gotcha.
You're right. They didn't capitalize on it right away. But to me, Denver goes up 10-0 and gets those stops that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling like the game is already pretty much over with their defense. Yeah. And to be honest, and we can get into this too, Drake May is not, in my opinion, played that well during this playoff run. And it's crazy that he's gotten all the way to the Super Bowl in his second year and has a chance to be the youngest quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl in Santa Clara next weekend. But what I was getting at is, to me, the two things from this game that have not been talked about enough are what I thought were two very controversial officiating decisions that I think cost Denver the game just as much as Sean Payton's decision to go for it on fourth down. The first one was, I still don't understand how they overturned that Stidham pass from an incomplete pass to a fumble. They said it was a backwards pass.
That was not a backwards pass.
The ball got deflected immediately. So they would have needed to determine, Pat, in that like 3 or 4 inch space from when Stidham tried to throw it with two hands to when it got deflected, that in that little area, the ball went backwards. Because use logic on this. If a defensive lineman goes straight up in the air at the line of scrimmage and bats a ball down and the ball goes backwards, that's not a backwards pass. That's an incomplete pass, right? Yeah. So it would need to, before the ball gets touched by a defender, it would have needed to be determined that the ball went backwards. The ball barely traveled in the air. I mean, it was hit. It was deflected immediately. So that, to me, was a wrong call. And if that's incomplete and they punt, well, then now New England's got to go the length of the field on them again. And in my opinion, there's no way that would have happened.
And Pony, to your point, I want to take it a step further. The NFL needs to do something about this little push thing anyway, because that is considered a pass, right? But at the end of the day, to your point, that push pass or whatever you want to call that play that Stenham was involved in, that ball never went backwards. And at the end of the day, the only way that ball could go backwards, the way that he pushed it, is that your shoulders have to be turned a certain way. And his shoulders are still facing up the field.
But my point is, the people that have broken that play down have focused on where the ball landed. It's not where it landed. It's where the ball was in the air before the defender hit it with his hand. So that's one they got wrong. And then the other one was, I agreed with Sean Payton on this. I don't think Drake May got that first down on that quarterback sneak. I don't think he did.
That was tough, Pony, just because you couldn't see the ball. It wasn't enough evidence on that one. When I saw that play, I knew that it was going to keep it on the field because he was covered up. Yes, it looked like his body was short, but there was no visual evidence on where the ball exactly was.
All right. So let's say on that one that you're right, that like you have to go with the call on the field. You can't overturn it on replay because it's not conclusive. Mm-hmm. Well, then I will amend my statement to this. When I saw it, I wasn't sure. I still don't know that he got the first down. It was
when I saw it, I thought he was short. When I saw it, I said, oh, he's short. But then they showed the views. I was like, you can't even see the ball.
Right, right. So maybe he didn't get the first down. I don't think that was a backwards pass. Those are two plays that officiating wise, like let's just say, and I don't think the first one's a 50-50 call. But let's say they're both 50-50 calls. The Patriots got both of them on the road at Denver. And if not for those two calls, they don't win the game, in my opinion. And then the last thing I'll say about Peyton's decision on fourth down is I think somebody should have asked him after the game if he knew that the weather was going to change the way that it did. Because
yes, they knew. Yes.
Well, then to me, that makes the decision to go for it even worse.
Yeah.
Because if you know that basically we're going to have, you know, the worst conditions possible because of the wind in the second half of the game, I think you got to try to get as many points as you can. Like take the three, go up two scores and dare New England in the second half of the game in those conditions to score more than 10 points.
But then again, Pony, it's almost like that's almost like asking a sharpshooter not to shoot his target when he has a clear shot. Like he's an offensive coordinator. Like he's always had the aggressive mindset. And it was 1 yard.
I know.
I can see if it was 3 yards. It was just a bad call, in my opinion.
Like, well, then one of the offensive line should have jumped offsides on purpose.
Right. Something.
No, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they should have. Move it back.
If one of those guys were like, yeah, this is a dumbass call, why not start on purpose?
Yeah.
No one would ever know.
Yeah, true story. That's very true.
Now let's get to some of the residual effects. Pony, you even alluded to these a little bit after the fact. Now that the Broncos are going home and have to kind of regroup and go back to the drawing board for next year, we're hearing some utterings out of Mile High, out of Denver. And one of those, you said it, Pony, Sean Payton and Bo Nix may be at odds going into the offseason. What are some things that the Broncos have to do going into next season that they ensure that they're back in the same spot in the 2026-27 season?
I think it's an awkward situation now. I think they need to hope that Davis Webb stays on there, because it sounds to me like Davis Webb, the quarterback's coach, who people have tried to interview to be a head coach, who's only, I think, 30 years old, former NFL backup quarterback, is like the buffer between Sean Payton and Bo Nix. I think Bo Nix had his feelings hurt two ways. The first one I get, the other one I really don't. I think that he's offended that Sean Payton talked so much about his injuries and his body. And I don't think players love that, especially if the information's wrong. You know, Sean Payton immediately came out and said, this is the problem. This is what's going on. And as it turned out, his facts weren't right. And Bo Nix, I think, took umbrage with that. And I think one of the reasons why Bo Nix doesn't love that is because what probably got on his nerves, and it's the same thing that happened to Carson Wentz in Philly when Nick Foles went on that run, I think he took exception to how excited everybody seemed to be about Stidham playing. And that's the part of it that I'm a little bit confused on. Like, you want your team to rally around the backup quarterback and give him confidence and give him like a morale boost and all those things. But my sense is that he felt like Peyton took it a step too far and almost made it sound like, you know, Stidham was on the same level as Nix and they really weren't losing anything. And they were pretty much the same team going from a franchise quarterback first round pick down to the backup. I think that's a tough needle to thread, where you want to give the guy that's playing confidence, but you also don't want to tick off someone that has an ego and a self-esteem stuff and, you know, all that kind of mental health stuff that comes with football. So I think there's fences that need to be mended there. And we know, Pat, that, like, yes, they've made the playoffs 2 years. They had the best record in the AFC, but we see it all the time. I mean, they wear their emotions on their sleeves. These guys yell at each other constantly. And, you know, Tom Brady and others will say that's a natural thing. That's a good thing. But when it manifests in this way, offensive coordinator getting fired, a guy that really didn't even have a job, Nick's is coming out.
He wasn't even calling the plays.
Right. Nick's right. He's a scapegoat. Nick's is coming out and saying he shouldn't have said these things about me. It's just going to be a soap opera to watch between these two as they try to get together again this offseason.
Yeah. Man, I don't like this from Sean Payton. I think he's getting a little bit. He's airing out a little bit too much. I think he has a little bit too. There's always, in my opinion, there's always been a code from players to coaches to players, what coaches, you know, should say in the media, what stays in the locker room, things like that. And I just feel like Sean Payton has no regards into that. He says what he wants. He pushes buttons however he wants. And that old way of thinking and the old way of coaching, that's out the window, man. He's gonna lose his team in a couple of years if he keeps this up. And I hate to say it, but the NFL now is younger. These are not older guys when you have, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, maybe 10, 30-year-olds on the football team. Like, you have to understand how to communicate and treat these young men, because like this day and age is totally different. Like, these guys not just going to take, you know, you talking to them any kind of way, or thinking that your messaging that you're persuading out to the media is going to make them play harder or make them play better. No, that's not the case anymore. So if Sean Payton continue this act up, I'm telling you, Pony, he's going to lose that locker room in a couple of years.
How would you have taken it if you had an injury and Arians or somebody said, oh yeah, the guy that's going to come off the bench is just as good as Pat? Would you not have minded that?
First of all, he's on the bench for a reason. and if he was as good as me, he wouldn't be, he'll be playing right now. And so yeah. Therefore, that's baloney. And why would you even say that? There's ways that you can get the backup, you know, geared up or show him that you have confidence in him. That's not one of them. Because he knows he's not better than no damn.
Didn't the team over the top to you? I mean, I think he created the impression among media and fans like they might be upgrading at quarterback by going to Stidham. It was bizarre. The whole week to me, I thought, was very strange the way that they tried to sell him as their quarterback. And it came from the coach. The coach was the guy that was the messenger, not media, not players. It was from him.
Tell me this, Pony. You know, guys always, you know, like to go throw out their resumes and talk about what they have done lately. And this league is all about what have you done for me lately. And yes, they got to the playoff this year. But who has Sean Payton want without Drew Brees, want with that's not the name, Drew Brees? Besides this year that he just had with Bo Nix, let's see what he's able to do after Bo Nix.
Yeah.
But what have Sean Payton done with any other quarterback that's not named Drew Brees?
I mean, he's like kept his head, you know, treaded water with guys like Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston and things like that. But they weren't teams that were winning playoff games or anything like that. They were just average football teams. That's it. Yeah.
But my point is, like, why do we, and obviously we know that he won a Super Bowl, this, that, and other, but how do he feel that he, obviously, I mean, we know he's the head coach, but that he can just out players and just talk to them any kind of way?
Well, I think he thinks that he's cut from that Bill Parcells cloth.
And again, that cloth is not relevant anymore.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like they got a little bit of a mess on their hands to clean up here, James, after a great season.
It is. Look, it went from highs to lows, from ebbs to flows really quick. And Pat's right. That cloth might have been it might be hung up in the closet somewhere. It's just a new day and age, and respect is a two-way street.
Hey, guys, before we move on to the NFC Championship game, I want to ask you a question, Pat, and you can do this too, James. What would be your grade for Drake May's playoff run? If you were just grading him for the three games he played, what would you give him as a grade if you were his teacher?
Drake made playoff run. So he played three games, completion rates 55%, passing yards 533 yards, touchdowns, four touchdowns, two interceptions, sacks 15 times. He rushed 24 carries for 141 yards and one touchdown. I will honestly give Drake May a grade of a B minus.
That's exactly where I was.
That was exactly
what literally exactly. I almost was going to say it at the same time. B minus is exactly where I was going to go to. Because on the numbers, great. They don't jump off the page. We also got to think of the defenses that he beat back to back.
That's what I was going to say. He beat three of the top five defenses in the playoff and going up against the number
Defense. Now he's going up against number one.
Now he's going up against the number one defense in the Super Bowl. So his numbers, again, might not pop off the screen, but you also have to look at that left side of the offensive line, why he's been sacked so much. And also,
I can't believe how bad Campbell is. That's the fourth pick in the draft. He's getting killed.
Yeah, my LSU Tiger is not looking really good right now.
And they're winning despite of that, right? He's having.
But here's the thing I don't get about that. And look, like, I'm guilty of this. You know, we talk about the draft on this podcast and other shows, and we act like we know everything about these guys. He just does not pass my eye test size-wise. Does he look like your prototype Willie Rofes, Jonathan Ogden, Trent Williams? He's not that big of a guy, Pat.
He's not. He's also the one guy – you know, not the one guy, but he's one of the guys where the measurements started to come out during the draft, right? Like the arm length, arm size. Yeah. Like in that. And usually I don't try to pay a lot of attention to that stuff, but I think when you're talking about offensive linemen, a lot of those measurements
you got to have long arms.
They matter.
He's built like a guard to me, not a tackle. I hate to say it, but the proof's in the pudding with the way he's played in the playoffs here.
And yeah. He's definitely had a tough year this year, but you know, he's going to have to go in the lab and hopefully he can have a better outing this year, because he also got to think about he had to deal with some injuries, didn't really have a growing opportunity. And he was kind of thrown right in the fire in the middle of the season when this team was rolling. You know what I mean? So he's in a tough situation, you know, and it's tough to learn on the fly when you don't have many reps as a rookie. You know what I mean? So I believe this offseason is going to be real, real big for him, and that would pretty much give us the indication if he can hold up as a tackle or if he needs to make a positions change.
And to me, this goes towards Drake May's curve, right? If my starting left tackle is having these kind of issues and been in and out, and I'm still winning football games against these defenses, and then people love to bring up his strength of schedule. It's the same guy that, you know, beat Lamar Jackson in the regular season and had Josh Allen in a hole until they came back. So
they went 9-0 on the road. I don't care if they were.
I don't give a damn who you playing. You go 9-0 on the road. It's never been done before.
All right. Well, let's go now to the NFC side of things. We'll talk about who Drake May and the Patriots are going to be playing in Super Bowl 60 in a little bit. But first, let's break down that game. A hard fought game. Seattle wins the NFC Championship game and the Rams get sent home. My Super Bowl pick for the NFC when we started this playoff preview. And a very good game for Matt Stafford, Sean McVay, and them. But just like Sean Payton, some people saying that Sean McVay might want some calls back too. So, Pony, I'll start with you. What was your kind of reaction to this NFC Championship game, a win by the Seattle Seahawks?
Well, I don't think those two situations are the same. The 4th-and-1 that Denver went for and missed versus the 4th-and-4 that the Rams didn't get. The Rams.
I would have kicked the field goal there.
Which one? Oh, you would have kicked the field goal with the Rams?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, we're going to disagree on that then. The reason why I disagree with you is because the way that the game had gone, I didn't think that the Rams' defense could get stops. They got the punt at the beginning of the second half. That's when the botched punt return happened. Other than that, I thought Darnold was cooking them. JSN was having a huge game. Kenneth Walker, when running the ball, was breaking guys' ankles. To me, in that situation, with the way the game had gone, I want to trust Matthew Stafford with the ball in his hands to deliver a play more than my defense. And you kick a field goal, you still put yourself down once. You're going to ask your defense to get stops and get you the ball back. So to me, like, you kick it with the way Seattle ended up going on the next drive, they were probably going to end up in field goal range, kick a field goal, and you're down 4 again. So I would have gone for it. That would have been probably best case scenario for the Rams. So I would have gone for it. I thought that, you know, now you're going to disagree, Pat, but I thought that saying the Sean Payton decision and the McVay decision were basically apples to apples was wrong. Now tell me why you would have kicked the field goal in that situation.
Because it was 5 minutes ago, three timeouts. And that's the hardest place to try to get a first down. And you cut your play. Seattle Seahawks already automatically know that you're passing the ball. Like, I can understand if it was a two-way goal, you know, keeping them on their heels to where that you that the Seattle Seahawks defense is thinking that you have the possibility of running the ball.
Yeah.
But it was fourth and three. All they had to do is guard. It was, basically fourth and goal essentially. Because all they needed was 4 yards to score, and it was fourth and three. So therefore, all they had to do was guard the goal line, and that's what they did. And Matthew Stafford had nowhere to go. His first look was taken away because there was double teaming Devontae Adams. Then they tried to run a back pylon route, which was the last progression in Matthew Stafford progression, and he had a safety on him in inside leverage. So to me, Sean McVay knows that this is going to be the hardest position to try to get a first down, because this team already knows that we're passing the ball. Our quarterback is not mobile. For one, you had three timeouts with 5 minutes to go. I'm going to take my chances. Yes, we haven't stopped them all game, but I'm going to take my chances. All right, this might be the time that Sam Darnold do give us an opportunity. This might be the chance where we can get a fumble. I just feel like by them going for it there, it made the position harder for them to go to what's easier, going down and kicking a field goal or trying to get a touchdown at the end of the game. I know what you're going to say, field goal.
So yes.
Therefore, I'd rather put myself in that position, forcing them to try to drive the ball down the field, because at the end of the day, now the situation, in my opinion, is going to be a little bit different for the offensive play caller. So now they're up four. They're playing with house money right now, so they can pretty much toy with, you know, the Rams right now. They're being up only one. Now their butthole is going to get a little bit tighter, and those plays is going to be a little bit more, oh, should we call this? Oh, are we comfortable of calling this? Like the game, like the call's going to come in a little bit different, because now they're only up 1 point versus being up four, playing with the defense, knowing that a touchdown still has to beat them. That's why I feel like if they kick that field goal, go up one, now that's putting pressure on the Seattle Seahawks and Clint Kubiak and Sam Darnold and that offense to be perfect. They have to execute. Now, with them being up four, the Rams thinking they're going to run the ball. So now they got them on their heels, and now they just play action. They had the Rams now guessing, versus if they're being up one, now I guaranteed you the Seattle Seahawks would have ran that football versus throwing it.
Yeah. Yeah, Seattle still see, because I looked at a positive of not getting it. Now that there's many, I mean, you don't get it, you feel like you're probably going to lose the game. But if you don't get the first down,
pointed to cut you off. And think about it. If the Rams had one, and they still got the ball back.
Yeah, but with like no time.
I understand that. But if they would have got the 1 point and they would have been down one, I feel like they would have been in better position. Like, hell, if I would have got to the 55-yard line, say Vince Puka would have got out of bounds, I'm trying to field goal now because I'm down 1 point. I got an opportunity to win the ball game.
What I was going to say was one of the other benefits of going for it is even if you don't get it, that team is backed up. And the problem for the Rams defense was that even in that situation, they didn't get stops until Seattle moved the ball to midfield.
But that's my point, Pony, because now the Seattle Seahawks know that the Rams
are expecting
they're about to run this football. Yes.
Yeah, I hear you.
So now they're selling out on the run. So now what Clint Kubiak is doing, they think we're about to run. Let's play action. Boom. Now we got 5 yards. Right. Now we got a first down because they only needed two first downs to pretty much close the game out.
And it's easier playing with a 4-point lead than it is a 1-point lead offensively.
100%.
I get all that. I still, though, would say the biggest reason why the Seahawks won the game was because just how great Darnold was, but especially how unstoppable the Darnold JSN combo is, even when the defense knows that's what's coming. Like that to me, I just, you played corner at the highest of levels. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Rams don't have a guy who's anywhere close to what you were as a player. But, mm-hmm. like, where are the schematic things to make sure that it's going to be Rashid Shaheed or Cooper Kupp or one of the tight ends or running? Like, where was that counterpunch from the Rams in this game, Pat? It never happened, really.
No, it really didn't. It really didn't. And that's been the Rams' Achilles heels on far as their defense all year. You know, I've been talking about it. That was going to be something that was going to keep this team back from, you know, going to the big dance, was this their secondary. And it proved me right, not only in this playoff game, but throughout the year. You know, for the most part, the Seattle Seahawks did a great job of utilizing JSM, moving him around, putting him in the backfield, having guys have to really communicate where he is. So that was that's where the Rams, you know, lost the battle. They didn't understand his locations, you know, where he was at given moments, because when you watch film and you understand where guys line up, it tells you 9 times out of 10 what routes they're going to run. Defensive coordinator 9 times out of 10 is going to put you in a good enough position to defend that route. Now is the ownership falls on the player to play with proper leverage, making sure that he's playing the right technique, making sure that he's doing his responsibility. A couple of those plays, I can tell you right now, leverage was terrible on one of them. Kobe Bryant on the post touchdown, he has to stay more square and understand. And to be fair, he did have a two-way go JSN on this specific route that I'm talking about. But he has to be able to stay square and being able to take at least one side away versus being cocked and giving the receiver a two-way go, to where if he goes inside, if he goes outside, you're going to be pretty much rounding off your brakes, versus if you stand square, you're giving that, you're forcing that receiver to run through you and pretty much. And then in the red zone, you kind of want to take some heat off of that, and possibly that could have been an incomplete pass. So leverage and being in and playing the right technique at that given time could have helped those DBs. But I knew that this secondary was going to struggle against JSN. They're not the only one. Everyone had pretty much trouble keeping a hand on him. But the guy's very, very elusive, man. He's a small, compact receiver that plays above his shoulders, doesn't mind the contact, and just a true competitor. So I think I truly believe that this New England Patriots defense secondary will do a much better job on JSN, because that's one thing that this Patriots defense do a really, really good job at is if you have a superstar, if you have something that you are really, really good at, the New England Patriots do a really, really good job of minimizing, you know, the explosive plays or minimizing the efforts that certain player may have to have an impact on the game. So I don't think he's going to have a huge game. I think he'll have some splash plays, but I think the New England Patriots will do a much better job of keeping him under wraps.
One thing to have on your mind as we move ahead to the Super Bowl, you know, Darnold, everyone is saying that he's slayed the dragon and, you know, he's silenced all the critics. And at this very moment, he has. I mean, he beat the guy who everybody thinks is going to win the MVP. And he went heads up in a shootout with him. And he was the better of the two quarterbacks. Yep. And that's right. I mean, that's true. Mm-hmm. You can't debate that or deny that. He played his best game ever when it mattered most. But I'm just going to say to Sam Darnold, you know, that will change if he stinks in the Super Bowl. You know, people don't remember that Rich Gannon was the MVP in 2002. They remember that he threw 5 interceptions in the Super Bowl against the Bucs. Like, Neil O'Donnell threw 3 interceptions in the Super Bowl against the Cowboys. 2 of them were picked. Like, those things, what you did to get to the Super Bowl, if you go out there and stink in the Super Bowl, that's going to be the lasting image that people have. And he's got one more game left. So right now, it looks like with what he did against the Rams late in the regular season, what he's done in the playoffs, yes, like the seeing ghost version of Sam Darnold is in the rearview mirror. But Pat, all it's going to take is one early turnover in the Super Bowl And all of those conversations, I'm serious, are going to come right back up. They are.
Yeah, and you're right.
So right now, everyone's saying, oh, like, you know, that's the old Sam Darnold. This is a new Sam Darnold. Let's get to Super Bowl Sunday and see if he can do it one more time on the biggest stage.
Yeah, those questions are definitely going to start arising again if, you know, if he doesn't have, you know, a decent game in the Super Bowl. I hope he does. You know,
me too.
The way that the team is playing and the way that Clint Kubiak is calling plays, JSN is playing out of his mind. Kenneth Walker is now running the ball, you know, outstanding, is definitely alleviating some pressure off Sam Darnold as far as passing the ball. So I think he can do it again, man. They're in a really, really good spot.
Yes, they are. All right, so before we let this podcast go, before we end this podcast, let's talk about, like we did for the Broncos, maybe some residual effects for the Rams after this loss. Do we think that Matthew Stafford returns with the Rams? Do we think that he's done, or is he giving it another go? And then we also saw Davante Adams have kind of a moment, a self-reflective moment at his locker, saying that it feels like a fairy tale at this point, getting to the Super Bowl. So two-part question. One,
brought to you by Michelob Ultra, by the way.
Yeah, there you go. Does Matt Stafford return and run it back with the Rams? And two, does Davante Adams come back to the NFL? And do you see Davante getting to the Super Bowl being a bride, not just a bridesmaid?
I'm going to go with Matthew Stafford coming, will return as the starting quarterback for the Los Angeles Rams. I think it's just going to come down to if the Rams are able to compensate him a little bit more, because we know what the quarterback market is right now. I think he's slated to make anywhere north of $40 million. And if he wins MVP, I know he's going to want a healthy raise. So I believe that they do get that that deal done before the new league year starts. Davante Adams, that's a very, very interesting one, because, you know, he's been dealing with some injuries this year with the hamstrings. I know he led the NFL in touchdowns, probably the most 1 yard touchdowns I've ever seen in a season. but I know he led the league this year in touchdowns, but he didn't have that Davante Adams effect, and I know how that feels, especially when you know been able to provide that, you know, over the years, and you know, Father Time is undefeated, you know. So I think it's going to come down to him personally feeling if he wants to go through it again, as far as the long season, going to 5 NFC championship, you know, not winning one of them. So that can be something that's weighing on him and questioning himself. Can, you know, whatever team that he's on, can they really, really do it? You know, because it's a very, very long season, man. I believe what Davante is in, what, year 13, I believe, year 12. So football season takes a lot out of you, man, especially when you're at the age that he's in and dealing with injuries and things like that. So, you know, he had a hell of a career, you know. I don't even like saying this no more, because you just never know what's going to happen with Bill Belichick not being a Hall of Famer. But he should be a Hall of Famer one day, just off the resume that he was able to put forth in his career. So the Davante Adams one, I don't really know. I think he will come back, but looking at him in his locker, it was kind of like, he's kind of constipating retiring. It just seemed like it took a lot out of him, and especially being to 5 NFC championships and not able to get over that hump. That could be the reasoning of the of him having that moment as well. But if you ask me, it looked like he definitely has a lot left in the tank. Obviously, we know that he can still catch the ball and catch touchdowns, as he led the NFL this year in touchdown receptions. So I'm going to go 50-50, but my gut says Davante will be back as well. I don't know if he'll be back with the Rams, but I do feel like Davante Adams will give the 2026 season.
Were you a have a drink in the locker room right after the game guy like him? Was that a Patrick Peterson move? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I had me a nice drink in the locker room.
When you're all dehydrated and like beaten to shit and stuff, that's great. That's okay. Interesting.
Guys smoking cigars.
That's true.
That's even worse.
Yeah.
I'd rather have me a drink than a cigar.
Well, that's 100% for me. So I think the Rams are still going to be good next year. I do think Stafford will come back. I do think that Adams will come back, but I do think they missed their best chance to win another Super Bowl. I think the NFC, the way things line up now, you've got the Bears, who I think are on the come up here. I think that it's possible the Commanders bounce back with Jaden Daniels now when he gets healthy. We saw them in the NFC Championship game 2 years ago. I think that they're going to be a relevant team. You've got the Eagles now with an offensive coordinator change. It's not out of the question that they rebound and are a much improved team. The Lions, I think, can be better than they were this year. So I my point is, you think they're done? Well, either way, the 49ers will probably be healthier next year. Your division, I think, will be more difficult for that reason. We see what Seattle did. So what I'm saying is, it's like, yeah, I think they'll be a double-digit win team. But I think this was their best shot to get back to another Super Bowl and win another one.
I don't agree? Think so, Pony, because they still have a young team. They just need some damn
The quarterback's not
secondary
young.
Help. I mean, but I'm talking about their pieces, like their defense. They still got young guys on the contract. On the offensive side of the ball, they still gonna have Puka Nacua under contract. The offensive line is all under contract. Only the running backs under contract. We all agree that Matthew Stafford is going to come back. And if he's able to play that the way that he's able to play that he played this year, they're going to be right back in the position that they was last year. They just need some secondary help. Yep. And I believe also, too, some interior linebackers, because teams started really gashing them in the running game later on in the year when they started dealing with those injuries. So if they're able to get some quality play in the corner, like a Jermaine Dean, you know, if they can steal him in this free agent, a guy who got some experience, Super Bowl experience, length, got some speed as well. They need to add some 5-star players in that secondary room, in my opinion, to really get them over the hump, because they're going to be able to compete with. We saw the offense can't compete with anybody. They just couldn't stop the ball from flying over their heads.
Well, let's see about Stafford's health, too. I mean, he this year made it through the season totally healthy. I think that's harder to do as you get into your late 30s for any player, especially a quarterback.
And on top of that, even with the questions coming into the season with the back. So that was remarkable.
They dodged that bullet big time. So, yeah, I think they'll be a good team, but I think we're going to be talking about this as a what if for the Rams for many years moving on from
here. Because I'm going to go back here, too. I don't think the Bears is going to be as good as they was this year.
Whoa.
I think they go
back off the Bears bandwagon, James. He was on it.
No. What I'm saying is, I don't think they're going to be a 13 win team this year. They're going to take a step back. I think Ben Johnson is going to get like Dan Campbell. He's going to start getting aggressive pants. And that shit going to start biting them in the butt. Watch.
I think they might end up being the best team in the NFL next year, but that's a topic for another podcast episode.
We'll see.
I'm keeping tabs. Right now, Pat's off the bandwagon. We'll see if he gets back on.
Yeah, they let me down, man. They ain't beat the
Rams, man. All right. Well, listen, we will be back on Monday. We will do our first kind of look at what went on in the offseason with the coaching changes that got made by teams and some of the decisions that have been made around the NFL. And then, of course, Thursday of next week, we will preview what we think is going to happen in Super Bowl 60. For James Jackson, Patrick Peterson, I'm Andrew Filippone. This is First and Pod.